Just remember this, Mr. Potter, that this rabble you're talking about, they do most of the working and paying and living and dying in this community. Well, is it too much to have them work and pay and live and die in a couple of decent rooms and a bath?
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to Milkshakes, Markets, Madness. My name is John Kutzmita. This is a show about financial markets and Brent's Southern accent. Before we get started, I want everyone to understand I'm poking fun at him because in this past weekend's episode, which I encourage you to watch, he let a good Southern y'all come out. And so I'm not letting him live it down. This is our Monday peak of the week where we look at the economic calendar ahead and some of the things that we think potentially might unfold as the week unfolds. But Brent, before we get into that, you were just explaining to me the grammatical usage of you all. Can you share that with the audience?
Yeah, this is a little thing that people might not know. And here's the funny thing is, like, you know, people probably heard me say this, but I grew up in a very rural part of Nebraska, but most Nebraskans don't really have a Southern accent. But when I was in high school, my friend from Arkansas lived with me for 4 years, and he had sisters and they all had these huge Southern accents. And I'm kind of one of those people, whenever I'm around somebody who, you know, I end up speaking like them. And so I end up picking up this Southern accent from them. But anyway, for anybody that's curious, if you ever hear somebody say y'all, that's singular. That's not a bunch of people. If you're referring to a bunch of people, you say all y'all. So anyway, there you go. That's my little insight on the Southern dialect for a while.
Well, look, speaking of picking up accents and languages when you're around certain types of people, you're now spending time, more time, if not all your time, in Latin America, or at least in the Caribbean and Puerto Rico. And so we all have to compliment you on your incredible Spanish. And if you're not familiar with how good that is, you should go check out our Spanish channel at Milkshakes Pod Español. We'll try to continue to share episodes with our Spanish dubbing involved. So hopefully you guys enjoy that. So Brent, let's talk about the week ahead. We've got some housing data sprinkled throughout. Housing's still one of those things that everybody, I feel like it's the classic hated bull market in stocks. It's now the hated bull market in housing, if you want to call it a bull market. So we'll keeping an eye on the housing data because eventually something's got to crack there. The supply issue, interest rates, all those things we know. It's the same narrative that's been pounded on the table all week. But in things that are a bit more liquid, or the markets that can react more spontaneously, probably the most important thing participants will be looking at is the end of the week PCE data, the personal consumption expenditures, which is personal income and spending, and arguably the Fed's favorite inflation indicator.
Yeah, you know, we've talked about this several times, but every time the Fed comes out and says we're data dependent and that we have not made up our mind on whether we're going to stop hiking or whether we're going to pivot, and we're waiting on the data, it makes all this data more important. And, you know, I've said this 100 times, there's no one single piece of data that I look at that's going to be like the be all say all, you know, and that's definitely going to give the hint, but it's more a combination of all of them, right? And if all of this stuff continues to perform the way it has, then the Fed's going to continue to say we're not done, right? But if you start to get a thing where all of the data starts to come in soft and you start to see a trend, well, then maybe that's an indication that they are done, right? And I think that's the way it'll be. So I don't know that there's any one piece this week that I'm focused on. However, I do think it's kind of interesting with the housing. And again, I don't claim to be a real estate expert, but, you know, I think you know, we bought an apartment here a year and a half ago. And I believe, I have to go back and look, I believe our rate was 5%. So, you know, we got the mortgage after rates had started to rise, but they hadn't really taken off yet. And I think in the last week, I saw a mortgage rate was now at 8%, right? And so when you think about it being 8%, that's a, 5 is a lot better than 8, right? You know, I know a lot of people that had, you know, mortgages at, you know, the 3, 4, whatever it was. And so when I first took it out, I was like, God, I wish I'd have got it at 3 or 4. But now with it at 8, you know, the 5% doesn't seem so bad. I don't think we're, I think people have heard these stories, their parents saying, oh, when I bought my first house and 1976, the mortgage was 18% or 17% or whatever it was, right? We have so much debt in the world now. I don't think we're going to get back to a situation where we can have 17% mortgage rates without a debt crisis happening. So as rates stay higher and as these mortgage rates creep higher, I do think it becomes increasingly likely we have a problem in housing. But so far, you know, we've talked about this several times, until you hit the wall, these higher rates don't make a big difference. But once you hit the wall, they make a big difference. So my guess is that when it comes to housing, everything will be fine until it isn't. And then when it isn't, it won't be fine in a really big way. I think that's more the case with kind of real estate and commercial real estate than with housing. But, you know, again, you know, mortgages at 8%, I think you're going to start to get into problems.
Yeah, let me add some context there, because one, you're in Puerto Rico. The financing market is very, very different. So your 5%, given all the circumstances, is more or less like a 3 or 4 for someone who's buying a house in a normal market with abundance of conforming loan access. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely, but that, you know, it bodes well in terms of pointing out or making the point, right? If you were going to be buying a house wherever you are, and the cost of that house is twice as much, you might sit on the sidelines longer or might not pull the trigger. You know, recency bias is such a powerful thing. And I feel like, you know, when the housing crisis from the GFC in 2009 unfolded and we didn't kind of have that double dip both in housing and in pretty much every asset market, and then from 2011 onward, just went straight up, I think people are still struggling with getting that wrong.
Yeah.
And hoping for, you know, it's a weird kind of diabolical hope. Like, yeah, well, we hope it crashes, right? I hope someone else suffers so that I can get a better price on the house. And one of the things I always push back on is, if you're thinking that way, you're probably the type of person who's going to crawl in a hole when the buying opportunity actually does present itself. So the idea that you're going to have the same mental, you're going to feel the same way now about getting into housing when there's a 30% discount or more. There's so many other biases to unpack there that I think people are very misguided in thinking that way. The other thing too, when we're talking recency bias, is this is a very different situation. It's a supply driven situation. A lot of people are sitting in homes that maybe they bought since 2011. They were in that 2011 to 2016 migration. They've been in the home now for 5-6 years. They've built up equity and they're sitting on a lot of places, 2% interest rate. So mobility is almost zero. Sure, at some point someone's gonna have to move. That potentially maybe that home becomes a rental because they don't wanna get rid of the mortgage. Even still, the supply issue, I know a lot of people are putting attention on Airbnbs, and suddenly these people who bought multiple properties for cash flow and vacation rentals are going to dump those assets. It goes back to a conversation we had this weekend, right? Where everyone thinks the end of the world, you know, you had given this Winnie the Pooh piglet analogy, and everyone thinks it's tomorrow and every day is the end of the world and it just never happens. I think housing is one of the best examples of that. So, all right, we've got not much else really on deck. We've got kind of the unfolding of things that have been transpiring in the Middle East. You know, is there going to be boots on the ground in Gaza? What kind of reaction we're going to have there? We talked about gold and what gold has kind of been teetering around. Do you have any additional thoughts you want to talk about some of the particular asset classes, maybe touching one last time on some of the things we talked about this weekend?
Well, you know, last week I talked about how I thought it was a big week because of all the Fed speakers and because of what was going on in the Middle East. And then kind of at the end, I indicated that I thought the one thing that I had my eyes on was Tesla. And then I thought that not because Tesla is necessarily so important to the economy, but it's more of a psychological thing with the whole, you know, everybody watches Tesla because it's Elon, right? And I think I'm not going to get the statistic right, but the valuation of Tesla is like equal to all the other car companies combined or something like that, right? And so, you know, I feel like it's an important stock just from a meme standpoint, and like the whole world is a meme now, right? And from a psychological standpoint, I think Tesla selling off can, you know, roll over into some of these rest of these markets, and that's what we saw. You know, I actually you know, last week I said I thought Tesla was had made a high for the year. I thought it was going to miss on earnings, and I thought it was going to sell off. That's exactly what had happened. We actually bought some puts last week, so that worked out pretty well. You never know with those because those are kind of a gamble, but those worked out pretty well. But, you know, and then by the end of the week, it wasn't just Tesla selling off. Everything else was too. You know, NVIDIA was back down at like $210 or $215 or something. You know, some of these other, you know, the, you know, Apple sold off again. And so, you know, when markets are trending in one direction because of this change in structure and because of the rise of passive, it tends to continue in that direction. But once it turns, it's really hard to turn again. So once it turns, it tends to go in that direction for a while. And so to me, I think the next 2 or 3 weeks are really important because if they continue to trend even sideways or down, to me, it makes it harder than to turn back up, right? And once it starts trending down, I think it could trend down in a while. So again, I don't know which way it's going to go. I just know we've been saying for a long time, third quarter, fourth quarter, things were going to get interesting. Now we've got some stuff in the Middle East. Now we've got companies starting to miss. We're now in the heart of earnings season for the third quarter earnings. Tesla missed. That was a big headline, you know, and so I think Tesla continues to sell off, and I think that has the potential to pull some things down with it. So I'm not an individual stock guy typically, but sometimes, you know, when these big brand name stocks make moves, I think it has a tendency to affect the overall markets. And I think that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah, I think it's a good point that all of the world is now a meme. Tesla's at the forefront of that. They're one of the big beneficiaries of the 2020, 2021 kind of meme rally. The other beneficiary who has kind of been in a grave since then is overall crypto markets. Now, a lot of people will argue Bitcoin is not crypto, and that's a whole other thing in itself. But real quick here, it looks like Bitcoin has been getting somewhat of this maybe risk-off bid or inflation bid or wartime bid. It seems to be trending a little bit like gold, and not on a peak of the week episode will we get into the differences, but what do you see in that price action so far? Do you think this move in Bitcoin is temporary, similar to your view on the potential move in gold?
Well, you know, it's pretty interesting because, you know, I've been in and out and down and around this rabbit hole of crypto several times, and I kind of get labeled like a Bitcoin hater. And the thing is, I'm not a Bitcoin hater. From a personal standpoint, I actually think it's pretty cool and I kind of like it. I just don't think it's going to become what a lot of the Bitcoin proponents think it's going to become. And one of the reasons I've said that, all I've said is that I think the government has more ability to stop it than the proponents do. Do they have a perfect ability to stop it? No, they don't have a perfect ability to stop it. I just think that they can do things that would inhibit its rise should they ever wish to do so. And they've started, you know, this Operation Choke Point that came out earlier this year. I think that's a real thing. I think they are making efforts to do it. And the other thing is, like, Bitcoin has never been through a crisis where it really proved itself, right? And I'm not saying, it, you know, at least during the crisis, we've never had a liquidity crisis or some kind of, you know, in the heart of a crisis, it has always sold off just like everything else, just like gold. You know, in a crisis, gold typically sells off as well because, you know, everybody needs dollars. I think it'd be really interesting. And the thing was, Bitcoin was around in 2020 and it sold off hard in March of 2020 and then it came back afterwards. And to me, the fact that it sold off hard during and it came back so fast afterwards makes it a very good play on global liquidity. And so if you're looking at Bitcoin as a play on global liquidity, then I think that's a fantastic way to play it. As far as, you know, a store of value in a crisis, I just haven't seen it prove itself yet. Maybe it will be, but it just historically hasn't done it. You know, in 2008, when we had the big, big crisis, it wasn't around. So we don't have that evidence. And so to me, if this conflict in the Middle East, you know, becomes a much bigger conflict and Bitcoin does really well in it, well, then it will have proven itself. But I would expect that it won't. I mean, that's just my personal opinion. I don't think it will. And I think it's probably... My guess is that probably by Monday or Tuesday, Israel has moved into Gaza. And as a result, I think probably Bitcoin and gold will probably trade higher into this week. If I had to make a bet, and I don't have to, and I might, but I haven't yet, but if I had to make a bet, actually, I do have some puts on the gold miners. If we go a lot higher in gold and Bitcoin this week, I will probably buy some puts because I think that will be a temporary further increase in the war premium that I don't think will last. Now, can it last? It absolutely can last. Can I be wrong? Of course I can be wrong. I'm just saying I don't think it will be, and we will wait and see. But that's where it's at.
Excellent. Yeah, some of the momentum too might have been rumors around ETF approval for Bitcoin. So
yep.
Yeah, I think Bitcoin will have another moment. I think all of crypto will. It very much has proven to be a liquidity play. The liquidity is not really there, despite yep. some of, you know, people put out great work showing liquidity upticks and downticks. And we need a major stimulative type of environment, that type of liquidity injection for those types of assets to really perform. But Bitcoin has been hanging in there. And partly for me, I think the war premium that we're discussing here makes sense for why it would slightly move in price. I think I would expect a slightly larger, more sustained move if this ETF rumor was actually driving the price. But yeah, it's always a fun speculation. And I think the fact that it is such a volatile asset and can do 2x in so such a quick amount of time, it does have a lot of watchers. But no, I appreciate your view on that. We'll see how what kind of bets and gambles you make this week for fun. And I'm sure we'll hear about that at the end of the week. For everyone else, good luck out there. We hopefully you have a good week. Let's all hope for quiet and peace if possible. And hopefully your portfolios do well amidst any of those circumstances. Hang in there. We'll maybe be back during the week with an update if things get really interesting. Otherwise, enjoy our weekend episode if you haven't watched that already. You can join Brent on Twitter throughout the week. Follow his commentary there with the handle SantiagoAUFund. You can find me there as well at John Kutzmita. The show is on YouTube and Twitter with the handle MilkshakesPod. That'll do it for the peak of the week. We'll see you guys all real soon. This show is provided for entertainment and informational purposes only. It should not be relied upon as legal, business, investment, or tax advice. Neither the hosts, guests, nor any funds they may manage intends to make an offer or solicitation for the sale or purchase of any specific securities, investments, or investment strategies.